Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and what a bumper-filled podcast we've got for you today.
The old hometown looks the same as I step down from the train.
There's so much going on in this week's podcast that I'm going to have to keep my ramblings at the start to a bare minimum to be able to fit it all in without it being a two-hour podcast. First up, we're going to have Brendan Rodgers with the post-match interview stuff from the Celtic Motherwell game on Saturday, and then that goes straight into the podcast with myself and Mark Cooper. We touch on the ICT game, the Motherwell game, Brendan's comments about the pitch, move on very quickly from there because we can't be asked talking about it, and then manage to fit in stuff about Sean Maloney. Anyway, I'll leave all that to our podcast. After that, we have a tale from the Celtic Wiki, which is Mr. Joseph Cullen, who is the first Celtic goalkeeper to lift the Scottish Cup. The event for him will be taking place on Saturday 25th of February at noon in the cemetery at Balmore Road prior to the Hamilton Accies game. More about that from the tale from the Celtic Wiki at the end. The only thing left I've got to say is my usual plug for the Celtic FC Foundation. A couple of events are now out there. There is the Ab Sale at Celtic Park, which if you're into that sort of thing, as I am, will be a brilliant fundraiser and just a magic event to be up there. Apparently it's blowing a gale up there and you'll get snow on your forehead. And it's on the 1st of May. So if you want to register for that now, you can. Also, we have the Henrik and Lubo Select game, which is taking place on the Sunday after, hopefully, we win the treble. So that'll be a fantastic atmosphere at Celtic Park that day if you get yourself along. And there'll be more tricks and treats and surprises coming up. Anyway, enough of me. I'm going to say good night and God bless. And this is Brendan, followed by Mark, followed by the Celtic.
We'll walk at daybreak again. I'll touch the green, green grass.
Brendan, another 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
Today, what were your thoughts on the performance?
I thought the players done remarkably well, considering the pitch, the level of the pitch is poor. You know, it's very, very difficult when you play against teams that, and Motherwell come, and I thought did very well on the back of losing 7 goals. You're always going to come here against a team that can attack and score goals and sit deep and block up the spaces. And of course, whenever you whenever you do that, then you rely on the speed of the game, the combinations, the quick play. Our players have to deal with a real difficult pitch, and technically they're having to make sure they touch at times before they get under control. They can't play first time, it's very difficult. So I think how they deal with a game on a difficult pitch and how creative they are is a huge testament to them. The game, first 20 minutes, was slow. We weren't aggressive enough. It was passing sideways, didn't penetrate enough, weren't incisive enough. We then get the penalty. Mitchell uses his body cleverly, gets the penalty, and then after that we lightened up a wee bit. Second half was much better. We changed a little bit at half time in order to open up the sides more, to play quicker, have better penetration in the team. And we ended up, we could have maybe had 2 or 3 more in the second half. So I was pleased in general. It's a great focus that the players have. We defend it very well, you know, really counter-press the game well, forcing them to kick it long. We win it back, we're on the attack. And I thought we attacked on the sides well. James Forrest was brilliant. Scotty was very good, should have scored after a great move, building through from the keeper. So some of our football is very good on what is, might not look it, but it's a very, very difficult field.
Just picture a concern.
Yes, it is for me. It is for me when you're trying to entertain supporters and play a level of game. The pitch is vital. But we'll get it organised. We'll get it in sort, I'm sure. But it's not something short term that will be done.
What did you make of the challenge of Kieran Tierney?
Again, I think it was a result of the pitch. I think the ball pops up for Kieran. And the players coming in, the ball pops up, and he makes the challenge on the back of that. You know, but if it rolls in nicely to him, he's getting tackled on his foot. So yeah, it didn't look very good, but I'll give the benefit of the doubt to the player that he didn't mean it.
Are you talking about a new pitch getting put down in the summer, Brendan?
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully that's what we should do. I think it's an old pitch here. You know, so we need to modernise the field. You know, you're looking fast football and speed in your game, and the level of the game that we're looking to play. I think we've seen it in pre-season through till early months of the season, the speed of our game, how we play. We actually go away to some grounds and play better because of the pitch is better. And obviously this here slows us down.
We talked about one of the pitches at Arsenal, pitches, surfaces
are that. Just a good pitch.
Have you already conveyed that?
Yes.
Pitch?
Yeah, so we need a diesel.
You've been linked this morning in France with the Rennes goalkeeper, Benoit Coustil.
Yeah. Tell me why I'd want the Rennes goalkeeper.
I have no idea.
Well, there you go. Why would I want him when I have Craig Gordon, who's like sweeper keeper? He's top class.
I'll be a no then.
Well, you're right. You decide.
Thank you.
Good man.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Well done. Sorry I can't give you any more.
So okay, cool. I'm joined now by Mark Cooper. Before we start, I always like to get a weather update. So Mark, how's things in South America today?
This is always a bad question, because it instantly aggravates about 95% of the listeners. It's 30 degrees, no cloud, and now everyone hates me.
Well, you see, for some people they might be sitting there thinking, oh, I couldn't put up with that. High humidity, maybe. All that stuff.
High humidity, no air conditioning.
You know, the glamour of the podcast, people here were wondering. before we started recording there, I just had to sit and watch a few of the wonders of modern technology. Mark, go away, get myself a drink and sit down, because it was just too hot to do a podcast without a glass of water.
I thought I was on Mastermind here.
Anyway, Mark actually lives in the New York subway, just in case you're wondering.
There's about a 20 carriage train going past just now. A freight train, great.
So, just to add to the professionalism, I'll cough all over the microphone. Let's start off with the games. There's been two games since our last podcast. So two games were Inverness in the cup and Motherwell in the league. So, first of all, I should have asked this before we start the podcast. Did you get to watch those games, Mark? It'll be a short podcast if the answer's no.
No, on to the next topic. yeah, I did. Via Celtic TV.
And
I don't do illegal streams. I still contribute to the club.
It's good.
Extortionate. It is extortionate. But
how much is it?
If I'm not paying any tickets, then I'm obligated to give something to a club from here. So
how much is it?
I think it's about £15 a month or something.
Which, so you get the home games live?
Yeah. So you get all of the Scottish games live, and then you get the European games after like 11 PM or something Scottish time.
Ah, right. So delayed transmission in European. But so you get the away games live as well.
Yeah. So it's good.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if it was only the home games, you'd be getting your money's worth just now. Because Celtic play at home. I keep trying to tell my wife. She has no recollection of this. We had no home games in the league in September and October, and that's why we're playing every single week at Celtic Park at the moment. But she's just, what, you've got another game again?
It's Saturday at 3 o'clock. Is that common, Brian?
Yes, exactly.
Or Harry even.
That's all right. So the Inverness game.
You're on Sportsound every other week, so come on.
If somebody doesn't know my real name just now they're a diddy.
Someone's pure writing it down on a pad of paper.
Somebody's doing it with a crayon. Yeah, so Inverness 6-0.
Yeah,
Dembele hat trick.
Dembele hat trick. So was that was a game where it was the kind of lofted pass into Lustig, who basically controlled it about a yard from the goalie.
That's right. Yes. he did that thing that you don't see in the Premier League very often, which is somebody controlling the ball instantly.
Yeah, yeah. It was. You see that kind of goal a lot in five-a-sides, don't you? Where there's just a goal hanger who's just chatting to the goalkeeper, and the ball comes up to him, and he, like, one out of three goals, he controls it properly and backheels it in the net. Nah, it was a good goal. I think that was the first one, right?
Yeah.
I think that was. And then Dembele went on a quick hat-trick where he put in the next three, I think.
Yeah, it was the one where the keeper really should have kept it out, sort of half-hearted attempt, and dribbled over the line.
And then Tierney got a goal near the end, and then Brown hit a really good one.
Yeah, that's right. Which emphasised Brendan Rodgers' point he was making prior to the Motherwell game, where he was talking about the fitness of Celtic.
Uh-huh.
And he was pointing out that we are getting a high proportion of our goals in the final 15 minutes of a game.
Yeah, yeah.
So overall, it was a comfortable win.
Yeah, they looked terrible, to be honest.
Yeah, and my brother had gone away for a long weekend to Dublin, and I sent him a text after about 20 minutes and said it'll be a miracle if Inverness finish this game with 11 men in the park.
Yeah.
But I felt, you know how people talk about the big clubs get beneficial decisions, Celtic get, you know, Brown never gets booked and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But see the stuff, the thing that people don't talk about and the thing they ignore, I think referees do. See when there's a low-key game at Celtic Park that Celtic comfortably win, I think opposition players get away with fouls because the referee's attitude is they're getting a doing anyway. The guy's not broken his leg.
Yeah. And I agree with you.
And that was happening all over the park in the Inverness game.
It's almost like a unspoken, like, you even saw it after jumping ahead to the last game against Motherwell, but after that challenge on Tierney.
Yeah.
And the referee within himself knows, if I kind of go by the regulations, that's a red card. But they're out of the game already, and he was probably just clumsy when he did it. He probably didn't mean it with any intent to injure him. Mm-hmm. So, and you can kind of see him. He's just chatting away to him for about near a minute or something. It's about 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and he's just like calmly talking to him. And the guy's kind of like repentantly kind of just nodding and kind of, and you're thinking, but it's just a complete straight red. It's like, it couldn't be a clearer red here.
But it's almost that sympathy thing of, and it actually picks up on a point that Hullboy made two podcasts ago, which is, although it's great that we are winning every week, we're all enjoying that. But the chat, and there's a bit of criticism that some of the media are decrying Celtic being so good and it's not good for our game.
Uh-huh.
When there's an exciting battle for second, third and fourth in Scottish football. But the counter to that is, as happened tonight, I saw a couple of people tweet about it. I saw Paul1888 tweet about it, so I didn't see it. The STV, in their roundup of the weekend games, didn't mention the Celtic game. There's almost now, because we are so far ahead of Scottish football, there's this, well, you're Celtic, so we'll just ignore you a wee bit.
Yeah. And
I would put that into the referee, and then at your point of the referee talking away to the guy, it's almost as if, well, I mean, I'll let you off with it because, of course, they're so much better than you that it can't be helped that you fail them.
They're so good, aren't they? Yes. They're so good. What can you do? What can you do? I should put you here. Sorry.
Yeah, so that was the... I mean, I'm not going to touch on the Inverness too much. We were just a different class to Inverness. I do think, and we've got in two games' time, I think we're away to Inverness on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
The draw away to Inverness, the more we are winning every week, the more I think that result bugs Brendan Rodgers.
Uh-huh.
So I'm quite sure he was delighted we thumped them for six, and I'm quite sure he wants to thump them up in Inverness.
Yeah.
So then on to the game more recently in people's minds was the game against Motherwell at the weekend. So what was your expectation? Motherwell had just lost seven goals to Aberdeen. What was your expectation going into the game?
My expectation was put my bank account on Celtic winning that game. I was reading the conversations before the game, and there's conversations of like people putting on like 7 and 8 nil and stuff, and like, and you could see Celtic when it started the first like 20 minutes, there just wasn't the same tempo to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I don't know, just a little bit off. I'm not sure what was the goal. It was Forrest's goal.
Yeah,
where his touch is lovely. It's a touch, and it's a change of angle, a change of direction, and he doesn't lose any pace at all. He kind of goes in, and he just slightly kind of goes out, and the defender doesn't have a clue what to do. And it's a really nice, it's a good finish as well, but it's a really nice touch. And what's the goal before Dembele scored? Dembele, was it a penalty?
Yeah.
Aye. Yeah, it's good. It's good. Sometimes it's hard to... When the opposition is... Like, I'm watching these games against the bottom six, and there really isn't a lot of quality there. Yeah. Like, St Johnson in fifth, you know, they're fairly well organised... And
Technically better. They're just well organised in Johnston. They're just really well drilled.
They are well. Yeah, exactly. And player for player, there's probably, you know, they're pretty similar to much of the bottom six. And then, you know, Aberdeen have a fairly decent squad now. Hearts have recruited that big the Greek guy, looks pretty composed in the middle, and you know. Decent players, whatever. But the bottom six, this, like, I'm watching it, and like the boy Chalmers, who is against Forrest, who came up through Celtic, I felt sorry for him because Forrest was really on the game on Saturday. He was really good. That's the best I've seen him since. He had a very good game away at St Johnston, where he scored that goal. When he ran from basically a halfway line, and he seems to have got back to that form when everyone then was saying, well, you can't put Roberts back in a team when Forrest is playing this well, and he seems to kind of have just got back to that level again. It'd be cool for him to be able to keep that up for, you know, like a month or so. But yeah, it's one of the interesting things, I think, and it kind of relates to what we've spoken about a few times about journalists covering a lot. Like, there's a lot of space given to Scottish football, but not a lot of analysis. And the fact that since we've come back, since basically the Rangers game, we've come back, and Brown's now, he now has a different role in the team. Like, Beaton is now sitting very deep and receiving it from the defence. And Brown seems to be, like, slightly higher up.
Yep.
And then, you know, Henderson, or whoever's been in there, but Henderson just now is being, like, further up again as a kind of that loose man, just kind of going into space and kind of linking up the play as we go up a pitch. But when all of the kind of, and I agree with it, all of the kind of analysis was that Brown was having his best season. Mm-hmm. But he was playing in a different role to how he's played his whole career. Like, he's now kind of as a complete sitting defender. And the two centre-backs would, you know, spread out.
Yep.
Brown would come in and almost be like a kind of like a triangle. But with him, you know, probably only about, I don't know, 10 yards ahead of him. Mm-hmm. And with probably the two fullbacks probably higher up than him or more or less in the same kind of level as him. And he was just controlling everything. And like I've no idea what the reasoning behind it is, but against Rangers, he got caught out a few times in the first half hour and he wasn't having an especially good game.
Yep.
And I think it would be a mistake for, like, I think he was so good before in the Champions League that I wouldn't not want him, I want him to play there in that role again as that deep-lying midfielder. Like, he had the highest out of any midfielder in the Champions League who had completed more than, like, 400 passes. So, like, obviously statistics can be skewed if, you know, someone only comes on for half a game or whatever. But basically, for someone who's played, like, consistently in the Champions League group stage, he had the highest passing accuracy out of anyone. He had 96%, according to UEFA, over the six games.
Yeah.
And that's playing in a team where there's kind of a less passing options, or theoretically, you know, like, we're going to be slightly on the back foot against Barcelona and, you know, City and whatever. So it's going to be harder for him to make those passes rather than, you know, Busquets giving it to someone who's free or whatever. And, like, his he covered... Something like he was in the top five of covering the most ground.
Yeah, it was like 12 kilometres a game or something like that.
It was unreal. He made the most interceptions.
He was I remember the two games looking at the stats and he covered a kilometre more than the next best player had
covered. Yeah. Exactly. So like, I'd want him back there when we're in the Champions League.
Could it be that it's just simply where it been evolving, that it was him and Armstrong, where,
yeah,
if we want to start talking, and he was a number six and Armstrong was a number eight.
Yeah.
And then with Armstrong having been injured and Beaton having come in, Beaton's never going to be the number eight.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a bit of a needs must that's pushed Brown up rather than they particularly want him to be there.
That's possibly true, yeah. But I would hope that, yeah, that it's possibly true, but I would have hoped that, like, McGregor and Henderson and possibly Christie, if he had stayed, could have been, you know, sufficient numbers and quality to be able to have played in those two as Armstrong and Rodic had played. Mm-hmm. until they both came back. But possibly you're right.
So the other thing, the reason I was asking as to what your expectation was, because I had a discussion with someone on Friday where we just expected that Motherwell to come in and park the bus, because you don't get sacked for losing 2-0 or 3-0 at Celtic Park, but you do get sacked for losing seven goals in two games consecutively.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
But actually, despite the fact that Motherwell were quite defensive, they did offer more of an attacking threat over 90 minutes than Aberdeen did 3 weeks ago. You know, they weren't doing that much, but they did more than ever Aberdeen did.
Yeah, yeah. But Aberdeen were especially... They're overly... they're quite disappointing, I thought, actually, Aberdeen.
Well, Aberdeen went completely man for man. So my sources at Celtic Park tell me that's why... That's why we quickly moved to a three at the back,
uh-huh,
with Tierney being pushed up, so that Johnny Hayes became a right back.
Yeah.
We just looked at them and said, they've gone man for man, pushed up Tierney, Johnny Hayes then becomes a right back in the game. And then the other thing about playing for man, the other thing we kept doing was getting the guys on the left and the guys on the right to, in the middle of play, to swap over. Because then you've got the left back running across to the right back position and vice versa. You pull them all over the place and they don't know where they're going.
It's amazing that you'd stick to that man to man so much. Like, I was listening to an analysis of the Carlos Alberto goal against Italy, and it was basically they watched, like, Italy were just going man to man so much that, so Jairzinho was on the right, and he just, like, he's told to go on the other side of the pitch, and they watch I'm not sure who it was, maybe Facchetti or whatever, just walk, yeah, completely like a, you know, dog on a leash. He's just, like, following him completely, and it just opens up. And so, like, they had Alberto just, like, sprint up. So as soon as it goes to Pelé, and there's meant to be an Italian left back there, and he knows there's not because Jairzinho's gone on the other side for the past 5 minutes or whatever. Well, then there's just a huge channel to go into. It just seems, like, crazy that Aberdeen, if Tierney goes up as he's going to go up, like, then that's your one opportunity, basically.
Yeah, you see, to then he's gone so far up the park, you've now got space in behind him to run into.
Exactly. You're going to have, if we have someone on a pitch who can find you with a 30-yard ball, Hayes is always going to be there. You don't even have to look. Like, Hayes is going to stay there in that 30 yards of space or whatever in between, you know, like, him on the touchline to our left centre-back. And then from there, we want some people, you know, as that centre-back has to go down to close him, then we want people from a midfield in for this ball coming in or whatever. It seems strange that...
But it's one of the things that bugs me when you hear on the television, if a goal's lost through zonal marking, you hear about it all the time, but you never hear about when goals are lost through man marking. And I'm not saying one's better than the other, it's just this sort of, well, you know, it's not zones that don't score goals, it's man and all that stuff and all that nonsense. But if you go as man for man as Aberdeen did, you're completely putting everything, you're giving up your whole game plan to the opposition, because you're saying all we are going to do for 90 minutes is react to what you do. If your guy runs there, we'll run there. And so there was a point in the first half, I think it was, where Simonovic gets the ball against Aberdeen. And we had, I think it was, somebody went left, somebody went right, and Brown did some sort of pirouette and turned. And as a consequence, Simonovic then runs with the ball for 40 yards, because the Aberdeen players are so busy running after people, nobody's actually watching the ball.
Yeah.
And he gets to go straight away through. But, so getting back to my point, I thought Motherwell at least tried to have an attacking presence.
Player for player, that actually, Pearson should be a good SPFL player. Scott McDonald has he's old now, but he does have quite a good touch. And, like, you can imagine, like, it being played into him, and he can receive it well back to goal. And he could find, you know, the what's a big boy called, Molt.
Molt, yeah.
Is quite a strong runner. McDonald and Pearson are of a better quality than most players. And McManus
that's three players who are a better standard than most SPFL teams.
But they've got a manager who seems to be getting angrier and angrier at the moment. So, what the biggest talking point that came. Well, there's two things. One, the penalty kick, just touching the penalty. At the game, I and everybody around me thought it was a soft penalty, that Dembele sort of threw himself down, but not one Motherwell player complained at all. Nobody ran to the ref, nobody did anything. So you're thinking, well, it must have been a Stonewall penalty. There was the challenge on Tierney, which, in the post-match interview, which you don't know this, but people listening to this podcast have heard just before us speaking, Brendan Rodgers uses the defence of the Motherwell player as how he starts to criticise our pitch. Because he says, maybe it's the pitch's fault because the ball bounced up. Were you surprised at how critical Brendan Rodgers was of the pitch?
Well, it's difficult. To be honest, it's difficult when I'm watching on Celtic TV on a stream.
Mm-hmm.
I paid for a stream. Yes. Stream.
Adrian Philby will be phoning you up if it's not a paid for stream. I've experienced this.
Oh yeah, was that when you? What was that application called again? Was it something like that?
I streamed a European, like 5 minutes in total of a European game, and then I get an email from JP. Do you mind coming in for a chat?
even if you're watching it on TV, it'd be kind of fairly difficult to properly like assess the quality of a pitch, never mind a stream.
Mm-hmm.
But what's it like when you're in a stadium? Like,
well, interesting.
Do you notice how bad it is?
Well,
because normally, sorry to interrupt you, but just to finish a point, normally, don't we have, it's usually us and Air United who have the best pitch every year, right?
Yeah, and funnily enough, about 10 minutes into the game, because we sit in the North Stand upper, so my brother had said to me, do you know, we should invest in some sort of plastic pitch protection or something, but our pitch looks really bad. In a line, 10 yards in from the touchline below us, where patently the water comes off the roof and comes straight down. Although, I would have to say, I'm no grass expert.
Not anymore.
No.
It was university days.
Exactly. I'm more of a coke man now. I'm no green grass expert. However, I was by chance speaking to a grass man a couple of weeks ago who was telling me that he's going to have murder when he starts.
I was McCoist, by the way.
Yes, it was Ali McCoist. I bumped into Ali McCoist and he was telling me it's going to be murder when he gets back to work in April because he tends to take the winter off because, I didn't know this, grass grows at 10 degrees centigrade and above.
Okay.
And he said on many occasions this winter, it's like Sunday in Glasgow was 12 degrees, and many occasions this winter it's been above 10 degrees and the grass has been growing. So, not only that, but we've got the UV light things that go across the pitch. But, and it's been not particularly wet since Christmas. Yet, by chance, by coincidence, my brother mentions to me on Saturday, look at the state of our pitch. That's where it's coming straight off the North Stand roof. And in press conference afterwards, Brendan Rodgers is saying, our pitch, not only is our pitch poor, we've been playing a lot. Many of our better games have been away from Celtic Park this season because of her poorer pitches. So it's not just saying our pitch isn't up to the standard I would like, it's actually saying our pitch is below the standard of many other grounds in Scottish football.
Uh-huh.
Which...
That is quite funny because aren't Hearts also tearing up their pitch?
I read a thing saying that Hearts were relaying their pitch before
like next week or something?
Aye, before the next home game.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, Cathro is wanting Hearts to be playing the same style of football that we play.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
So, the other... He was asked whether we would be looking at the type of pitch that Arsenal's got, which is like half grass, half AstroTurf.
Yeah.
And his attitude seemed to be, I don't really care, I just want a better pitch than what we've got. I think the issues all arise from that was a brand new pitch after the Commonwealth Games.
Okay.
But it wasn't, but obviously with the Commonwealth Games being later, it wasn't relayed. If you remember, we had the Commonwealth Games and then didn't play home games because the new pitch wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether it's just that the pitch never ever properly bedded in after the Commonwealth Games.
Mm-hmm.
If it was laid late.
Fascinating stuff.
All right. Wait, actually, is it somebody said to me on the podcast, Are you not going to run in, sit on Twitter? Are you not going to run into problems and start sounding like the with Celtic winning every week, the podcast is going to become so sycophantic about Celtic, it'll sound like a Graham Hunter podcast.
Oh, jeez.
So the other talking point this week, apart from our pitch, which was a talking point for 24 hours, was, or trying to make it a talking point, if I ignore one other team's talking point, was Matt Lindsay today in the Herald bemoaning, it was like a fan blog, bemoaning the fact that Ryan Christie is playing for Aberdeen.
Yeah. It's amazing that that's his main preoccupation.
Yeah, it's not fair that Aberdeen are going to finish second because they've got a guy who's not good enough for the Celtic team. It's basically what he's saying.
Yeah.
And that guy is so much better than it. It was a sort of an odd logic. He's so much better than what Aberdeen have already got. He might not be good enough for Celtic, but he's better than anything Aberdeen have got. And he will be the difference between Aberdeen and Rangers and make Aberdeen finish second, which then seems to be saying a guy who's not good enough for Celtic is infinitely better than anybody in the Rangers team as well. Yeah.
Well, it's Rangers' fault for not asking for a loan of Ryan Christie. I assume they didn't ask.
Well, maybe their manager did, and that's why he got sacked, stroke, resigned. Do you think there's any issue with us lending players to the second place team in Scottish football? I don't see there's any issue with us lending a player to the second place team in Scottish football. So the other talking point in Scottish football is...
Just one other thing, sorry.
Yes?
The goal he scored.
Yes.
Superb. Lovely goal. Absolutely lovely goal.
Now, I know this is a bit like asking somebody in Glasgow about what the Spanish press are saying or the French press are saying, but since you're in the same continent, is it true that the Brazilian press...
I'm not sure. The way I saw it kind of subsequently reported, like about third hand, I think one of the paragraphs said, it's the goal all of Brazil are talking about. Are they? Yeah. But, yeah, it was superb though, right?
Oh, it was a great goal, but I'm not sure if all of Brazil is talking about Ryan Christie's...
Not yet.
Do you think he should be in the Celtic team? Do you think he should be in the Celtic team? Do you think we should have kept hold of him?
With Rogic and Armstrong out, there'd be an argument for it.
Because, I mean, they've been playing Henderson and McGregor.
Yeah. I think if he does that, basically, once every 3 weeks, if he's playing consistently, Aberdeen are playing well, he's playing well, and he's playing 90 minutes, he's playing 15 full games until the end of the season, that'll be more beneficial than what would have happened, I think. And so it's a good loan. That was part of my problem with the Henderson loan. That it seemed kind of reactive rather than proactive. The one up to Norway.
Yeah.
Because it was said that, you know, they had asked, like, someone had gotten in contact with Dyla and he'd said, yeah, actually, we do have a player, and we sent him up. But it wasn't the right club for him to go to. Like, they were going, it was Rosenberg, and they were going for the title. And they basically just wanted to supplement their squad.
Yep.
Whereas, like, if we're actually going to loan someone out, like the Christie thing, you kind of want to get... You want to know the style they're playing. You want to know that he's going to be playing... He's going to be a first-teamer. He's going to be starting, 90% of the games or whatever. And that it's going to be much more beneficial than, you know, the alternative.
Yeah, like Henderson, anyway. Like Henderson at Hibs last season, he played games.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think Christie will make it at Celtic?
At Celtic? The problem is we're also pushing on, aren't we?
Yeah.
There's Brown, Brown, Rogic, Kouassi, Armstrong. There's Henderson and McGregor kind of pushing in to get into that kind of, what, five, six midfielders that we're going to have in the squad.
Yep.
Centre midfielders that Beaton. We're going to have in the squad. Beaton, sorry, yeah. If he stays. And then I wouldn't be surprised, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we go for another.
Mm-hmm.
I quite like him. Like, I don't think... I wouldn't go as far as Lacaymore when the other week, but I kind of agree with his like, general point that there is something about Christie. Like I remember when we signed him, and I went and watched a video of him. This is quite sad on my behalf actually, but I went and watched a video of him playing away in Romania in some Europa League qualifier game.
That is sad. Yep. Yeah.
That is sad. And he was excellent. He was, like, he was much better than I assumed he was. And, like, he was pressing, like, as an attacking midfielder, he was pressing them, winning a ball back, or they would kind of play a misplaced ball. And then in other clips, you'd see he's quite agile as well.
Mm-hmm.
He can kind of move quite freely in different directions. And he might... I'll conclude it by saying I'd be surprised if he makes it, because we're talking about Celtic being a last 16 quarter-final Champions League team. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going for in the next 4 years.
Yep. He just strikes me as a typical type of player that we've had in my lifetime who doesn't quite make it. That when he first comes in, you know he's got something, but you also know he just lacks. And you know, I don't want to be too critical, but it just strikes me that he might lack physique and pace at the level that we want to be playing.
Yeah, and there's also an issue. I agree with that, and there's also an issue of where do you play these guys? Like, so if. If Rodgers wants to play with like three forwards, like two wide forwards and one main forward, then you're basically talking about he's going to be one of the two kind of like shuttling midfielders. Unless they do go to a 3-3-3-1
mm-hmm.
that there've been kind of whispers about. But I couldn't see him. Yeah, I don't think he has the physique to play. And in that kind of shuttling role, it's a lot of going back and forth, back like the kind of player they bought, like Henderson, Jordan Henderson for Liverpool.
Yeah.
When he was, like, you need a lot of, like, Henderson, it's got a bit of quality, but his stamina is excellent, apparently. And Armstrong is the same, like, where he can just go back and forth, he covers so much ground. That then if you're to say that someone like Rogic, who might not be able to do that, but the great thing about Rogic is his incisive passes.
Yep.
His ability to receive the ball under pressure, even at Champions League level. And he can withstand... the opposition, you know, midfielders pressuring him. And then you think about, like, Christie. I don't want to be too harsh about Christie because he's a good footballer.
And this is always the problem when you then go to speak about a player that's on the fringes and you're thinking to yourself, I'd like him to make it, but I don't think he will. And you then go to explain why you don't think he will. It sounds like you're saying you think
he should. Exactly.
When you're not.
Exactly. There's a lot of people who would... Yeah, exactly. And what we're basically discussing is last 16 football.
Yes.
We're talking about are these players that Celtic are going to be buying and currently have, are they going to be good enough to play against Juventus? Are they going to be good enough against Benfica?
Mm-hmm. And Christie has impressed me when he's come on in games. he looks like he can create something at the edge of the box when plays tight. It looks like your point about his movement, that he can twist in and out and create and score a goal, yeah, and create something in a tight space.
Yeah.
That's what I think he's got. I'm just not sure if we are going to be trying to be a second placed Champions League group, team finishing second in a Champions League group. So we're going to be playing teams who are probably better than us.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I think, you know, you see this in England, where the top two or three teams can afford to have some players who are quality technical players and really, yeah, high quality. The teams just below that level, the players have got to be 6 foot, or this is what they're looking for, 6 foot and fast. Again, you made this point last season about Charlie Mulgrew, his running ability to close down space, that when you're playing teams who are technically better than you, you need physically strong players with a great deal of stamina, because a lot of your game in those matches when you're playing a team better than you is about closing down space, denying them space to play. And yeah, then getting back to, if we've got three up front who've got, you need those three to have pace to then be able to stop the play and immediately quickly have a counter attack. And I'm just not sure Christie fits into being able to provide that.
Yeah. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but there's a player in the development squad who I like called Mikey Johnson. Mm-hmm. He scored four goals the other week. But he carries the ball. His feet... You know when you get a guy, a player, who has really quick, like, twitchy little body movements?
Yep.
Always look for that in players. Like, feet and body movements, they can go at different angles. And he seems to have that. I mentioned him before, so I don't want to kind of overdo it. But just as a small thing, he does look like a good player. Like, every week now, whenever team lines come out, I always scan the subs quickly before the first team to see if he's made it on the bench yet. He's a good player.
So, for example, I always, in the first time I saw him, liked Sean Maloney.
Yeah.
Because I always felt Sean Maloney made defenders make mistakes just by his body shape and movement. I always, yeah, felt Maloney was great at getting his free kicks at the edge of the box.
Yeah.
Because it would be fouled, because people didn't know how to handle him and deal with him.
Yeah. Maloney had a great first touch. And he had that little feint as though he was going to go,
yep,
on the left side. And he invariably wouldn't, he'd cut inside. But you're right. And then it could gain him a like yard of space to then kind of play the ball in, or, you know, go in a little kind of accelerate forward inside or whatever. But, often then they would just take him out, yeah, when he was starting to get away in, yeah. Yeah, Maloney is a very intelligent player as well. I was really happy for him when he did that well in that season in Wigan.
Yeah.
And he became like their reference player. And he was scoring like free kicks and stuff. And then when he had that good... we're digressing here, but sorry. But then when he had...
It's all right, the other option is to revert back to talking about grass, so...
Well, yeah, I think people have turned off by now anyway. But yeah, I was really happy for him as well, because he was never... It was that kind of Scottish thing where... He would only start getting in Scotland when he was like 25, 26. Yeah. Or he'd be kind of, they'd throw him on for the last 10 minutes when we're already 2-0 down or something. And he was like Scottish Player of the Year. And you're thinking, no, we actually have a kid here. He's a lovely first touch. He's like composed when people start pressuring him. He's good in tight spaces. Okay, he doesn't have like electric pace, but he can retain the ball all the time. A lot of players who like don't lose the ball,
mm-hmm,
and like high up the pitch as well, and you give it to them, and yeah, maybe something won't come off, but they're not. They just like
Anyway, I'm completely digressing.
To meet this hypothetical situations
20 years ago.
I was going to say, to make this a full retro podcast, I think Sean Maloney was another class above Aidan McGeady as a player. Always felt, because of the points you've just made, he didn't lose the ball as regularly in frustrating positions, offered a greater goal threat, and I just thought was offered more to the team. But the challenge, because of his stature, that you saw with O'Neill bringing him into the first team, but then not quite being sure where to play him because he brought him as a striker and then takes him down to Villa, so patently thinks this is a player.
Yeah.
And then doesn't really know where to play him at Villa. And then Strachan brings him back up to Celtic. And then Strachan doesn't really know where to play him. But I think he would fit perfect. The Maloney of 2000, if he was fit as well, which was always an issue, the Maloney of sort of 2004 through to about 2009, a fully fit Maloney, I think would fit into the current Celtic system.
Yeah, I'm going to carry on this Maloney chat here. Everyone's probably thinking, what are they talking about?
Have I downloaded Maloney a podcast from 10 years ago?
Maloney comes back. Now, apart from my... I thought he got... Sometimes I see players like this. There's a young player in Argentina who I also think the same about. That they build up their upper body too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that Maloney was getting a bit too chunky, and it was kind of, he was becoming less agile and less kind of, like, he was always quite elusive, Maloney.
Mm-hmm.
And he was becoming, and he was getting injuries. And then down at Wigan, Martinez said, like, he's out of shape, like, he'll need like 2-3 months to get like fit. And when he was in his like prime at Wigan, it looked as though he had like half a stone off.
Well, I remember hearing in his second bout at Celtic that one of the things that was frustrating the Celtic medical people was he was overtraining.
Uh-huh.
That he was going away and doing his own training regime. That they was saying was contributing to his injuries.
Yeah. I was always really fond of him. When we sold him to Wigan for $1 million, I think the same day or the same week we bought Bangura for $2 million.
There's no comparison.
Anyway. And then the next 2 years he was playing well in the Premier League.
Yes. So the only other thing that's been happening in Scottish football in the last wee while is managers have gone crazy. You've had Matt McGee being sent to the stand and then wanting to have a go at the guy who was filming him.
Yeah.
And then the Rangers management team who resigned but didn't resign but did resign.
And then I saw another Rangers manager who seemed to be breakdancing on a touchline.
Yes.
It's kind of in a Run DMC mode.
Well, it is the retro podcast, so maybe something's maybe something's happening. So what's your take on the Rangers management resigning? Do you think they resigned?
I was talking about this. I was chatting to my mum and dad on Skype last week, and we were chatting about this. And does an agent doesn't have like the authority, surely? Like, surely you need the signatures of the other people there. Yes. Like, because basically you're breaking a contract. Like, you're agreeing. Like, you can't sack someone based on a conversation with a guy's agent, surely?
Well, also,
like, I don't know any more information than that, but it just from that it just seemed.
If an agent resigns on Monday, they have a chat about it on Tuesday, and then the guy's then taking training and takes a press conference on Friday afternoon, and then Friday night they say, Aquive decided to take his resignation after all, because do you know what? This is Rangers Football Club, and we don't have people resigning on us and then not. It just struck me as that probably the agent's gone along and said, look, you're wanting rid of... Because I'd heard that they were wanting to sack him, but they couldn't afford to.
Yeah.
And I'd heard that they were going to chuck... What's-his-face, the guy with the Bentley, McParland under the bus, as a defence mechanism. And the next night, Richard Wilson, the Dave King fan club on Sports Sound, starts talking about how Warburton was a great manager until he brought McParland in, and then he started signing crap players, so it was all McParland's fault. And I thought, well, there you go. They've started the narrative for chucking the guy under the bus. And then there was the sacking thing, but it just struck me as that maybe the agent had gone in and said, look, you're not happy with this guy and you want to sack him, but you can't afford to, and we don't want to be here if you're not happy. So let's have, but we can't have a club poach our management team because you charge them money. So let's have a conversation about waiving all this money to make it easy for you and easy for us. I think that might have happened, but that's very different to actually resigning.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're in a complete.
On a side point, it's amazing. It's amazing that the transfers of, so you get Senderos, Hill, Cranchar, Barton, and Garner.
Yeah.
The first four are free transfers. And Garner's was 28 when they signed him, and they signed him for about 1.8 or 2 million or something.
Yeah.
And the five of them had, oh no, the four had, there's two of them had contracts of 2 years, mm-hmm. and two of them had contracts of 3 years. They committed to, they made a financial commitment of £9 million over the course of, was 3 years. With no real resale value for any of them.
No.
And they sanctioned those transfers.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, they must know inherently that they're not going to win the league as well.
Yep.
So it's just complete incompetence.
And at the same time, they also have one of the existing squad hitting 37, 38. So they've already got age in the squad that you'd be wanting to replace, and they stick in additional age into the squad.
Yeah.
But it just demonstrates a point we were making before we start the podcast. From day one of that new club, there appears to have been no strategy bar let's win the next game and deal with the consequences the day after.
Yeah.
So obviously there's been hearts have gone down the director of football and young coach route, which is a crazy way to do it. Does the director of football pick the team? What's the coach know about anything? Suddenly when the new Rangers are doing that, that's a great way to do it, and it's fantastic and everything will be wonderful. So Do you think that they'll manage to make a success of it, or do you think they'll just continue with their stumbling from one disaster to the next?
Well, you're tempted to go for a latter, but to be honest, if you recruit talented people, you should do well. Like if they recruit like a bright guy who's a director of football, and the manager and him have. They kind of believe in the same, they're looking for the same kind of qualities in each position, mm-hmm. and they kind of, I'm trying to think of the right word, but they kind of like coincide a lot of their opinions on football and footballers, then it can be, like, it should be quite successful. Like, they have a bigger budget than any other team apart from ourselves. They have a huge fan base. That the atmosphere of having, 5,000 fans going away to Scottish grounds and, you know, having 50,000 at home, that must give you an advantage over Aberdeen, Hearts, Hibs.
Well, certainly over Aberdeen, because they take no supporters.
Oof. And like, Rangers, as we were saying before,
before a podcast, they should have got to this stage with a surplus of not spending that much money coming up the leagues, because they're playing against part-time footballers. And when you get into the top two leagues, then you can start to kind of, you know, expand a bit and start spending a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been so short-term. It's been so short-term. Like, Hill, Cranshaw, Barton, who's the other? Like, Senderos, jeez.
Oh, I know.
Like, and with that, they're going to have no money to then regenerate the site.
It's great, isn't it? So our next game on Saturday is, I need to look this up because I just know there's going to be a show and the Glasgow Celtic will be there. We're at home to Hamilton on Saturday. So what's your expectation from that game?
Michael Johnson to score a hat-trick. No. it should be a comfortable one. Should be. It's not anything interesting.
Because people listening to this go, he thinks it's going to be a comfortable win, does he? That's interesting. What do you want me to say?
I want you to give me an exact score. And the exact score.
Hamilton at home, 4-0.
And the scorers?
I've said the first three, Mikey Johnson and Dembele. Nah, do you think Henderson will start?
No. Because Armstrong came back.
Yeah. It's a pity. Henderson kind of is... The level in his games kind of varied quite a bit. And think of the, like, three or four games, like... What did he play? Maybe four games there?
Mm-hmm.
And two of them were pretty good. But really, you want to be, you know...
Do you know what I think?
Really?
He's making some really nice passes for some goal, you know, setting up against Inverness, some really, really lovely passes through to Tierney or whatever. And then he could be anonymous for 10 minutes. And you cannot have a midfielder in the system that we play be anonymous for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe the problem.
I would think that... as he develops, say from 26 onwards, he'll be a deeper midfielder.
Yep.
Like, you kind of need that little, like, burst of pace and that kind of, like, twitchiness. I'm trying to think of a better term.
You're liking twitchy footballers, aren't you?
Yeah. But they make the difference. But, yeah, like... It's especially on the wings they made a difference, but
if you, yeah, because he is a nice passer,
mm-hmm.
and he does have, he's got a nice aggression to him sometimes. That he can be quite tenacious and quite abrasive for, like, how old is he? About 19, 20. There's a little glimpses that he has quite a kind of. Tenacious, but and he has a lovely weight of pass. Like, I would actually, I'd prefer to see him kind of just deeper, like stroking it about.
You'd like to see him deep stroking it about, okay?
Jesus, is that the... I'm too naive when I'm speaking here.
He's 20. He'll be 21. He'll be 21 shortly.
I was wondering what you were laughing about at that point. I had no idea. Anyway.
Oh, for goodness sake. So, yeah, I don't think he'll be playing. So he's not going to get your goals.
Yeah, well, 4-0. Dembele, Sinclair.
Another.
Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to record this section, and every week I'm just going to put on what just for every game. What do you think the score is going to be? 4-0. So with that, I will say Mark Cooper for this 20-minute podcast of 59 minutes. Thanks very much.
No Ordinary Joe, a tale from the Celtic Wiki. When considering the art of a goalkeeper, it is often the elegance and athleticism of the old masters that most readily springs to mind. Men like Yashin and Zoff set the benchmark for modern goalkeepers with performances of agility, intelligence, composure and courage. They are the godfathers of today's cultured custodians. But in football's formative years, there was little room for culture or elegance. The art of a primitive goalkeeper was often painted in his own blood. In the game's earliest days, when teams would line up with seven forwards, the goalkeeper was a bloody and bruised bulwark battered by the relentless storm of attack. Things were certainly very different from today. Until a law change in 1887, goalkeepers could handle the ball anywhere on the park. Between 1887 and 1912, they were restricted to handling the ball in their own half. In reality though, a keeper rarely ventured too far from his own goal. Forwards of the time were robust, fearsome and unforgiving. Bundling was a popular and legitimate tactic. This involved violently shoulder barging a keeper holding the ball into the goal. Perhaps unsurprisingly, most keepers often preferred to punch the ball clear rather than catch it. Signed in the first days of 1892, Joseph Cullen became Celtic's last line of defence at a time when to be a goalkeeper remained a most hazardous occupation. Born in the south side of Glasgow, Cullen made his name in the juniors with an impressive Ben Burbo. A Scottish junior international, Joseph made his Celtic bow in a 3-1 friendly win at Third Lanark on January the 2nd. Legend has it that Dan Doyle picked him out from the Cathkin Park crowd and told him to get stripped to play. In reality, Tom Maley had moved swiftly to sign Joe, and the erratic performance of keeper Tom Duff had been blamed for an 8-0 humiliation at the hands of Dumbarton on New Year's Day. Cullen kept a clean sheet in a 2-0 friendly victory over the original Rangers, and on January the 23rd, he was selected for his competitive debut in a Scottish Cup quarter-final tie against Cowlairs. The boys had never lifted the Scottish Cup, and the determination to right that wrong was illustrated in a comprehensive 4-1 triumph. Rangers were dispatched 5-3 in the semi-final, as the Celts progressed to meet establishment favourites Queen's Park in the final. The original final clash on March the 12th would be declared void, as the slopes of Ibrox couldn't contain the huge 40,000 crowd, with many of the enthusiastic spectators encroaching on the play. A replay was arranged, and on April the 9th, as a strong wind swept across the Ibrox pitch, Celtic captain James Kelly led his team onto the park and into battle. Celtic would carry their impressive recent form into the final. From the off, Queen simply had no answer to the men from the East End, and the stylish Celts swept to a thrilling 5-1 victory. The Scottish Cup was Celtic's. Joe Cullen produced an admirable display, an assured presence in support of the magnificent Doyle and Jerry Reynolds. This breakthrough triumph was met with delirium throughout Scotland's Irish communities. The Scottish referee reported that when news of Celtic's victory reached Cope Bridge, the cheers from the town echoed all the way back to Ibrox. Celtic would end the year with a remarkable Scottish Cup, Glasgow Cup and Charity Cup treble. History had been made, and Joe had played his part performing football's most dangerous duty. Cullen would play some 73 times for Celtic, including in August 1892, the first match to be staged at the current Celtic Park. A steady rather than outstanding performer, Joe might not be regarded as a goalkeeping great, but his fearless devotion to his duties was unquestioned, and in the name of Celtic, Cullen regularly suffered at the hands, shoulders and boots of forwards. In one particularly brutal encounter with Sunderland, Joe's unflinching performance would conclude with him being kicked unconscious by Renton-born forward John Campbell. One Celtic supporter was so impressed with Cullen's bravery, he later presented the keeper with a gold watch as a token of appreciation. But perhaps inevitably, such physical punishment took its toll on both body and mind. Willie Mailey would later remark that Joel was never quite the same following that infamous Sunderland clash. In May 1897, after losing his place to the great Dan McArthur, Cullen would depart Celtic for Tottenham Hotspur. A popular character with a renowned sense of humour, Joel was a favourite figure in the Parkhead dressing room. He would leave Glasgow not only with the best wishes of his support and his teammates, but with a deserved place in Celtic history assured. Joel would die prematurely from pneumonia in 1905. Now, some 112 years after his passing, thanks to the outstanding work of the Celtic Grave Society, his place in Celtic history will be celebrated once more.